This programme was first broadcast on ORFM Dunedin and made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Hello and welcome to Bringing Wellbeing to Life, the programme that takes wellbeing research off the page and into our lives. I'm Dr. Denise Quinlan, and today we're talking about boredom in the classroom and what we can do about it. That's both as a teacher and as a student. My guests today are from Denmark, where they have been very active in this area, and we're very lucky to have them with us. Today we have Mette Lædertug, who's a PhD with a postdoc in positive education. Mette is formerly a school teacher with over 20 years of teaching experience. Her research focuses on optimal learning and well-being at primary and secondary level. And throughout her career, Mette has met many students who don't learn or thrive optimally, and this is what's really got her fired up to battle boredom and has given her faith in the positive results that are coming from these efforts. Mette's colleague with me today is Nana Poop. Nana has an MA in positive psychology. She's also a process consultant that delivers teacher training, focuses on how to engage people in education and how to develop professional learning communities. She's the author of a series of books on tools for classroom management, and she is always on the lookout for new ways to involve, engage, and motivate students, teachers, and other staff in education institutions. Mette and Nana, we are delighted to have you with us. Welcome to Bringing Wellbeing to Life.
Thank you very much, Denise.
Thank you. We're pleased to be here.
I've got your book in my hand, The Battle Against Boredom in Schools, and I don't think this is one of the most beautiful books that I have held and read through in years. Just the way that you've laid it out and the range of exercises, I am really excited about this book. So it's just fantastic to have you here to chat to. So
thank you.
To start off, we know that you've worked in education and on student wellbeing for a long time now. And you've kind of brought this to a big focus on the topic of battling boredom. Tell us why this topic is so important to you and what made you decide to kind of focus your efforts on boredom?
The first time we had a national survey on wellbeing in Denmark was actually in 2015. And the results came out in 16, and we went to the conference on wellbeing. And they told us there that the research results showed that 26% of children of Danish children are bored in school often or very often. And we were looking at each other and we found these numbers quite devastating. It's one out of four children bored in school so often. So when I came back home that evening, I talked to my husband and my youngest son, Victor. And I was telling him about the conference and about the numbers. And my son, he was 13 at that time. And he turned to me and he said, "I'm very surprised of these numbers too." And then he said, "I would have imagined they would have been much higher." And I thought, wow, yeah, I got a shock. And I turned to him and I looked at him and said, "Honestly? Can you tell me how much time are you bored in school? Not just a little bit and not something that you can easily do something about, but when are you really severe bored in school?" And he was thinking about it for a second and then he said, I would guess 50% of the time.
Yeah.
And I know that if I send my kid to school, then he would be bored for an hour or two a day. And I knew that if I had a job like that, I would quit immediately. So that was the time when we looked at each other in the four authors and said, we need to do something about this. This is not okay.
You are people who've looked at boredom in great detail, and I liked your kind of speedometer of boredom, and you talk about different kinds of boredom. Tell us a bit more about that.
Yeah, I can do that. All types of boredom are not the same. We can talk about the more healthy one that are short-term boredom, and there will be the unhealthy long-term and severe boredom.
Yeah.
So the healthy boredom is a signal to explore the opportunities of finding something else to do, while the long-term and unhealthy boredom has negative effects on both learning and well-being. And as you talked about in our book, we use the speedometers with three different types of boredom. You can talk about the indifferent, the calibrating, the searching, the reactant, and the apathetic boredom, and they will appear different. So for us, it's important to let the teachers know that some students are more introvert and some are more extrovert when they show boredom. So the speedometer is a help to the teachers how to recognize how boredom, what it looks like, what can you actually see. And then you, of course, you have to go into a dialogue with the students about what they experience. And in our book, we have some specific exercises to do that.
And so if I was, talk to me about an introverted versus an extroverted student who's bored in the class. What might I be most likely to see?
I think that what you notice in classroom is always the extrovert behavior. So if a student is introvert, you might not even notice that they are bored. And actually, we have in the Danish survey, we have students telling the researchers that they are trying not to show boredom. They're trying not to affect the teacher-student relationship, and they're trying not to affect their grades. So they would act as if they are not bored, but severe bored anyway.
That's a little bit heartbreaking, isn't it? It's a student saying, I am bored out of my mind, but if I show it, the teacher will be angry with me, it'll affect my grades, it's best that I just go underground and keep quiet.
Yeah.
That's terrible. That is terrible.
Yeah, it is.
And then, of course, we notice the extrovert who's bored more easily because they're more likely to draw our attention, make a fuss. What kind of behavior do you typically see with the extroverted students?
We see either the type who actually express the boredom. Can we do something else? Or that's the more positive way to actually ask the teacher if it's possible to do it in another way or quicker or whatever. But you also see the students who is behaving negatively. Maybe they are just, looking at Facebook while the teaching is going on, or they are disturbing the person sitting next to them, or they might even leave the room. And in the worst case, we see that they actually quit school because this is not for me. This is actually too boring.
So let's start talking about what some of your advice to, how did you start thinking about ways to support teachers?
When we looked at each other and said we need to battle boredom, what we were searching for was the right kind of framework. That we needed something that were theoretically sound and actually applicable in the classroom. That's when we turned to the PERMA model created by Martin Seligman as a theoretical framework for well-being. But I have been doing my PhD in strength-based learning, so I've been working a lot with the character strengths and seen how they can progress both well-being and learning in the classroom. And I think that the PERMA model adds even more values to the strength work. So we decided to use the PERMA as a theoretical foundation, but we would use it as a method, as a tool in the classroom and the PERMA model is that you have to consider the positive emotion in the classroom. You need to consider the engagement, the relationships in the classroom, the meaning of the content, and giving the students possibilities to accomplish in the classroom. And instead of just using it as a theoretical framework, we use it as a method for the teachers to consider in the classroom when they prepare their session and when they execute the session. They need to consider these elements. How do I make sure that there's actually positive emotions in my classroom? We know that the children, they broaden their perspective, their cognitive repertoire as soon as they have positive emotions. So how do we make sure that somewhere in the session that I prepared for my students, mm-hmm. I have also considered the positive emotions.
Yeah.
And so with each of the different elements, we suggest that you use that as a method, as a framework for even planning the teaching. But I think it's quite important that teacher consider that they can do it both explicit in the teaching or implicit. Yeah. It could be in the subject. We have some different exercises showing how can you actually do math while you're still having fun. Or it could be sort of like in between stuff that you do a brain break exercise to raise energy and raise positive emotions in the classroom between two more serious content sessions within the session.
Yeah. And I guess also, if I'm thinking about this from a teacher's perspective, there may be some teachers that look at this and go, wow, I think I'm really good on generating positive emotion in my class, but actually I think my weak place is meaning or allowing my students space to get a sense of accomplishment. So, you know, there's a lovely range of things for teachers to think about where in their own teaching style they could benefit most as well in terms of dialing up more of this for their students. And so can you tell us about some of the strategies that you've developed? You just mentioned some meta for positive emotions, you know, thinking about it being implicit or whether there's a brain break. What else would you, what are some of the other activities or strategies that you suggest to teachers looking to generate positive emotions?
Well, as we just talked about, we looked into what would help the teacher, but we also need to look into what would help the students. So we want to create the learning environment based on the PERMA, as Mette said. And to do that, the teacher can use specific classroom management tools. Mette said brain breaks as an example. And then in the book, we have some different exercises. Actually, you'll find 90 exercises in the book. So just to give you one, as you asked in the beginning of the book, working with positive emotions, we have one called Meaningful Activities, and in that activity we would let the students pair up and discuss the purpose of going to school. Something we might take for granted, but it isn't all over the world, so just to have the talk about what is actually the meaning of being here, and what is my saying into that, and what can I actually do to make it meaningful. So we want to make sure that the students also do their part of this work.
Lovely.
Another example would be the boredom thermometer. If you use that for a shorter period, you will let the student put a score up every day and calculate the overall score in the class at the end of the week. And then when you see the overall score, you will facilitate a talk about what can you and the class do and learn from this? What can we learn from the score, and what can we actually do to get more of what we want in class? So a lot of exercises to engage more. It's not just the teacher arriving and then do a lot of stuff and then everything will change. We need to do to interact and do the things together with the students.
And that's part of it's actually, I don't know, giving the students credit for being the alive, vibrant, interesting human beings that they are, and saying engagement is something we're going to co-create. It's not about a teacher coming in being all dancing, all singing, interesting. Exactly. It's about what makes this classroom, what makes our learning engaging and interesting. Yeah. I like that. And I love the idea of a class having a boredom thermometer.
I think that's a really good idea. You're not going to do it for a long time, but for a shorter period to make sure that you actually look into this.
Coming back to some of the other strategies that you've developed and activities that you use for engagement and relationships, what are some of those? Some of your favorites?
I'm not sure if I have some favorites. I think it's more the importance of using the PERMA framework, both in your preparation and the execution in class. So the important thing is to focus on all five elements, including the strength, as Mette talked about. And I think when you use the classroom management strategies, you can involve and engage most possible students. Mette, you would like to add something?
I have a favorite. In our book, we use the active constructive responding. Uh-huh. And actually, when we wrote the book, we were four authors together. And some of the time, it is very joyful, and sometimes it's rather tough.
And I'm laughing out loud.
Yeah. And Nana sort of tried to engage me in walking the talk all the way myself, so to stay in the positive, constructive responding whenever we had discussion. And it was so interesting to see what does it actually do when you're trying to walk the talk yourself and to practice. And I actually think that that's a very important issue for relationship building, is how do we actually respond to somebody else? And I think that both students and teachers and the rest of us, we could really need to practice on the constructive responding.
Oh, I think so.
Denise, we made a sign. So I just did the crossing for the four squares in the model. And when I did like this, Mette knew what I was talking about. And then she had to go back to the active constructive.
This is such good practice to have, you know, these little shortcuts that we learn in relationships, in families, at work, of, you know, what you can say and what you can't say. I'm really appreciating what you're saying for teachers here about the thinking about the PERMA structure as a dashboard to have in front of us mentally while we're teaching, as well as in our planning. How are my relationships going? Have I lost people? Have I been really cold? Did I just shut somebody down, or did I answer really in a friendly, constructive way? Yeah.
I have had teachers doing an exercise with pearls, where they had to put small pearls in their right pockets from the start of the morning. And every time they gave a constructive feedback, they could move one pearl from the right pocket to the left pocket. Not in order it was not needed to collect, you know, like 10 or 20 or 50 pearls a day, but actually to create a bit awareness. Am I as positive, constructive speaking as I'm imagining I am? I don't know if you have the same in New Zealand, but in Denmark we have a sort of norm for teachers and personnel working in kindergartens and schools and so on. They have to be kind, positive persons, and they don't have the mental image that I might be an angry or not open-minded or person. So sometimes small exercises on your own communication patterns like this can create awareness of your own. Is it okay just to have two pearls in your pocket when you leave school today? Yeah. Or do you want to have 10 or 20?
I can think of some teachers I know who say they're really good. The pearls would be moving from one pocket to the other in the day at school. But then once they get home after school, not so much.
Yeah.
You know, so sometimes it's around how we are as parents, as well as, you know, that it's the same human being going home, and the relationships at home are just as important. So I think some of these strategies that you're offering to teachers for their teaching are also really useful to think about applying at home as well.
You could easily do it like you say, I will do a 24-hour challenge, or I'll do a week challenge, and I'll just exercise, but you could also do it with the students, maybe not the smaller, younger students, but you could actually do it with secondary level student. That would be quite perfect to do that as well.
And in terms of activities for meaning and purpose, or to enable students to have more sense of accomplishment in the classroom, what activities do you suggest there?
We have used a meaning model from a Danish researcher called Isaksen, where we talk about this different levels of meaning, and you can create meaning on a big scale level. What's the meaning of life? But you can also create meaning on a very small scale. what's the meaning of doing this specific exercise in class right now? So to talk to the students about these different levels of meaning, and then make sure that they know that sometimes it's just concerning the very small meaning, and sometimes this affects actually the bigger meaning.
I love this. And I know when I do work with people, sometimes I'm with students, talk about students and adults, we talk about, some of us have a sense of meaning with a capital M, you know, my life has purpose, I know what I want. And then some of us are kind of a bit lost. And I say, well, if you haven't found big M, you can look for small M. And it can be, think of it like a breadcrumb trail, that there are little clues along the way. And some of the things that can be helpful are to think about, I think it's a lovely question is, what was the most worthwhile thing you did today?
Yeah.
Yeah, what made your day feel worthwhile? And, you know, and then taking a minute, what made this class feel worthwhile? What makes this learning feel worthwhile? I think it's really nice for us to explore where the little nuggets of meaning lie in our days.
Yeah. And I think we need to be better to discuss it, because we don't always serve the why for the students in the classroom. Why do we need to actually learn this? Why is this important? And sometimes the answer is something like, well, you need that to pass your exams, but that's way, way, way in front of me, and I cannot find meaning in that for today.
Well, in Denmark, the government wants 100% of the teenagers to finish what we call youth education. But when it comes to the numbers for learning and well-being, we seem at the moment to be satisfied with only 70 or 75% of all students thriving in school. So that actually leaves one out of four students in kind of misery. So I think one of the big lessons is that we need to look into that and actually discuss how many students do you think we should aim for to thrive in schools, and to what extent is the learning optimal?
Even to be asked the question in class, what would make learning in this classroom less boring and more interesting? Wow, yeah. Suddenly I'm engaged.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It doesn't have to be that difficult, actually, but you need to think about it. And before, when you and made it talk, I was thinking about the fact that when you ask teachers, why do we do this in class? Why do the students have to learn this? And why is the agenda or program today like this? The teacher will often have a really good answer. But when I ask the students the same question, they haven't got a clue. So there's a gap between what the teachers are thinking and have been thinking about in the preparation. They know why, but they don't share it with the students. So if we can just do that a bit more, I think there will be a lot to learn from that.
When we released the book, we have had so excellent feedback from teachers, from students, from school managers, from researchers. But one of the big issues with the book is that there's a huge difference between acknowledging that there's boredom in schools and we need to do something about it. That's what one thing. And we actually had the leader of the school management in Denmark. He said, well, I've been bored to school too. That's just, you know, business as usual. But it's not business as usual, because we need, you know, today we didn't need lifelong learning, and we cannot just bore the students so much that they will, you know, not be fond of learning. That would be devastating.
Absolutely.
But I think there's a difference between acknowledging that we have a problem with boredom and we need to do something about it, and to say that I have a problem with boredom in my classroom and I need to do something about it. So there's a huge difference between them. I've done a lot of observation in classroom for research, and sometimes you see in the classroom that four or five students, they are very engaged in a discussion with the teacher, but the rest of the class are being terribly bored. And in my recent research project, when we ask the students, they tell us that 80% of the time teachers are talking in the classroom, mm-hmm. and 20% of the time the students are being active. Then when we are talking with the teachers are telling us, we have had such wonderful discussion with the students in the classroom. So there seems to be a huge gap between what the teachers understand from a good session and what the students understand from a good session in the classroom.
Which goes to suggest that it would be really productive and really helpful to have some conversation around what makes class interesting. Were you interested, were you not? And to bring in the boredom thermometer for a while. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that would help. And it's all about making the engaging education. I mean, it's not if we can see that only 4 or 5 students are actually active, we need to do something about it. But it starts with that we actually see that that is what is going on.
If you had to pick one thing that would make the biggest difference to young people's resilience and well-being, what would that be?
Right now, it's sort of boredom that is on our agenda. Yeah. And I think that it's quite important to kill some of the myths. A lot of people are saying, you know, that it's healthy to be bored or it's just normal.